Radio Influence. The future is now.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. And here comes the submission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Which fighters received UFC contracts on this week's episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series? I am going to let you know here on this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence, along with talking about what happened on Tuesday's episode of the Contender Series. Going to have five interviews for you here on this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence. Going to be joined by Calvin Kattar. He's going to be making his UFC debut on Saturday night, stepping up on short notice. We'll talk to him about his matchup. That'll be a part of the TV prelims on FXX. Also, we're going to be joined by two fighters that are going to be on next week's episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. You'll hear from Kyler Phillips and John Castaneda. Also, going to be joined by two fighters that are going to be a part of the CES MMA 45 card coming up on August 11th. You'll hear from Juliana Coutinho, who's going to be fighting for the heavyweight title. Also, we'll hear from Leon Davis. So those interviews are coming up here later on here in the podcast. Of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is a go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners, live pay-per-views and TV tapings, full-length matches and interviews, movies and documentaries. It's your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. You can download the Fight app today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Of course, they always have a bunch of MMA on Fight TV. Some of those are free, that are not behind a paywall. So be sure to check out them. Of course, they will have the Ryzen card coming up this weekend. Of course, that is for $19.99. So be sure to head over to Fight TV. And by hitting that link, let's Fight TV know that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. So I hope everyone is off to a great week. It's been a fabulous start for me. On Tuesday night, I went out to the Tampa Bay Rays game, had a good time out there, almost saw the Rays blow a 5-run lead, but get the win there, so I had a good time. So I was unable to watch the Contender Series live, so of course I'm recording this here on early Wednesday morning. Started off my Wednesday by watching Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. And, you know, once again, I'd say I actually ended up watching the Snoop Cast, which I just find so entertaining to me. And if you've never listened to the Snoop Cast, the best way that to describe what the Snoop Cast is just simply, it's like you and your buddies sitting at the bar and just, you know, talking about whatever. I mean, that's about the best way. And, you know, as I've said this before about the Snoop Cast. To me, it's all about entertainment, you know, and when we're watching fights, it's about entertainment. Yes, it's a sport, but you're going to go out and entertain, and personally, I'm entertained by the Snoop Cast. I watch it. I did not watch the Snoop Cast last week, but did watch it this week and enjoyed it. Of course, it was headlined by Carl Roberson getting a TKO in via elbows in 15 seconds, and of course, that ultimately does get him a UFC contract. I'm actually going to be talking to Carl later on this week. We'll have that video up on the MMAreport.com. Just vicious elbows he landed on Ryan Spann. Then you had Kyle Stewart get a TKO win due to leg injury against Jason Jackson at the start of the second round. And if you go back and you watch that fight, it is actually when Kyle Stewart dropped Jason Jackson. That's when you see the injury. I saw on Desmond Green's Instagram feed this morning that it's a broken tibia for Jason Jackson. And Jason Jackson was off to a great start in that fight prior to getting caught there in what was the last minute or so of that opening round. He was off to a great start, was performing really well. So you got to have to imagine that clearly on the UFC radar, you know, after the fact, you know, Dana White said, you know, there's guys they like, but they're only signing two guys. But, you know, they just basically said, go out there and show what you're worth. Go out on the regional scene, and definitely we are we'll be interested in bringing you back. So, you know, obviously sending healing vibes out to Jason Jackson. Thought he was off to a great start. But, you know, look, kudos to Kyle Stewart. And, you know, one of the things I think you think about Jason Jackson is, and maybe you wonder, at what point did he kind of realize, was it not till that 22nd mark of the second round that he actually realized that he had an injury? But seeing the healing vibes him, but congratulations there to Kyle Stewart. The other fighter to receive a UFC contract was Jeff Neal. Got a TKO win in the first round against Chase Walden, 1 minute and 56 seconds. Of course, Jeff took this fight on short notice. Initially, Chase Walden was scheduled to take on Gabriel Checo. Checo pulled out of the fight due to undisclosed reasons. Neal takes this fight on short notice. When I actually talked to Chase Walden, it was prior to the change in opponent, and one of the things he said to me was that, you know, he wanted to throw them hands. And, you know, when he said in preparations for Gabriel, he knew that, you know, leg lock defense was going to be a key thing for him. But congratulations to Jeff Neal. Takes a fight at 180 pounds. He's a 170 or so. He's going to come into the UFC as a 170. And by the way, to go back to Carl Roberson, I'm interested to ask him this when I talk to him later this week. Is Dana White said that he feels that he's actually a 185er and not a 205er. So I'm interested to see what Carl has to say about what Dana White had to say there. Also, this card saw wins by Alonzo Minifield and Dan Eagle. Actually going to have an interview with Dan later on this week, so look out for that. He got a submission win over Luis Gomez. And Alonzo Minifield got a TKO win due to a doctor's stoppage at the end of the first round over Daniel Jolly due to Daniel Jolly being unable to see. And you know, one to me, and when I do these shows, I have a little document in front of me of things I want to mention. And the thing that I have wrote about a Minifield is, after the referee, you know, learns, hey, this fight's over, Jolly says he can't see, and Alonzo Minifield, as the referee comes over to him, Chris Torloni was the referee, and Minifield goes, "Are you effing serious?" Just a great line there. But clear, you know, Alonzo Minifield, a guy that I did an interview last week, one of my biggest takeaways from the interview was when I asked him, I go, what do you want people to know about you just as a person? And he said, I just want people to know I'm a friendly guy. And obviously, if you Google Alonzo Minifield's name, you'll see a great story that Sean Alshadi of MMAfighting.com wrote about him, just about you know, his upbringing and what he went through as a child. And but I had a really interesting conversation with Alonzo. So if you go over to the MMAreport.com, you can check out that video interview that I did with him. But obviously, congratulations to Carl Roberson and Jeff Neal for getting into the UFC, and we'll see when those UFC debuts do take place for both of those fighters, but definitely fighters that you're interested to see how they do develop going forward. Of course, you know, personally, I love this contender series. I think that it's and I tell you, I love the pace of the fights. I mean, there's none of that filler content. It's just, I mean, the filler content only is basically telling you who these guys are before the fight. So personally, I'm a big fan of that. I look forward to it. You know, whether I'm watching it live on a Tuesday night or here, as I did this week here on Wednesday morning. So, but overall, you know, I just, once again, the Snoop broadcast to me, it's just so hilarious. It's absolutely comical to me. So I always look forward to that. Of course, you know, next week, next Tuesday, we will have some fighters that are going to be on this fight card coming up next week that are going to be a part of the August 1st episode. So be on the lookout for that here on next week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. But of course, you know, this week is it's a big week in MMA. UFC 214 is on Saturday night. At the end of the show, following the interviews, I'll talk a little bit about UFC 214 and what's going, general thoughts on that fight card. Of course, I will have a preview podcast later on this week on Friday morning. Myself and Daniel Galvan, we will preview UFC 214. Of course, also on Saturday, you have the PFL 2 event, which, as I said last week here on this podcast, still don't understand why you would want to go against the UFC prelims, but our UFC 214 pay-per-view, but that's it is what they are doing there. So, but by the way, speaking of UFC 214, one of the things that, you know, obviously I think is pretty well known, the television prelims are going to be on FXX. Now, if you are not if you do not know where FXX is on your cable or satellite provider, I can tell you on DirecTV, because I have DirecTV, that it is channel 259. So if you're looking to watch these TV prelims on DirecTV, it is channel 259. And, you know, one of the things, and, you know, the reason it's not on FS1 is because there's Major League Baseball. And look, a UFC preliminary card is not going to be, you know, aired over a baseball game on FS1. That's just the facts. But it was interesting, you know, to kind of see why it was on FXX, because on FX, there's just some movies playing. And on FS2, there's NHRA drag racing. So, but then, you know, I ended up finding this sheet about cable subscribers, and this is from variety.com, and this is as of March 21st 2017, and I thought this was kind of interesting. Did you realize that FXX is actually in more homes than FS1? They are in 85.5 million homes, where FS1 is in 84.1 million homes. And by the way, FX is in 90 million homes. FS2 is in 50 million homes. And just a year ago, they were only in 45 million homes. So they're doing well. Now, of course, you know, this is an MMA podcast. So as I'm looking at this chart, I look over at Spike TV. And Spike TV now only has 83.4 million subscribers. Back in 2015, that number was 93.3 million. They've lost 10% of their subscribers. I mean, look, I've talked about this multiple times. That, you know, the way we view television is just changing. And a lot of people, quote unquote, cutting the cord or not even cutting the cord. They've never had the cord. And, you know, I've said this. I mean, I personally have thought about cutting the cord, but because of live sports programming, I just won't cut the cord. And, you know, but I'll say this, a lot of my television viewing actually is via Netflix or DVR. And, you know, this past weekend, I was binge watching Last Chance U on Netflix. I think I've got about one or two more episodes left. That's, you know, that's one of those episodes on Saturday, I'm sitting there and I must have watched like three or four episodes in a row. And I'm like, okay, I need to kind of, you know, do something else. But that is one of my favorite shows there on FXX, but I thought, or on Netflix, but I thought the interesting amount of subscribers and kind of how much Spike is down. If you look at the whole Viacom portfolio, that it has not been a couple of good years for them in terms of losing cable subscribers. But let me look, it's across the board. Everyone is losing cable subscribers. Now, if you listen to last week's MMA report or MMA Insiders podcast, we talked a lot about the piece on Real Sports about you know, what's going on over there in Chechnya. And, you know, one of the things that I said on that podcast was people need to ask Chris Weidman about this, because Chris Weidman went over there in 2015, and, you know, and I basically had a very bold statement saying that if a reporter is covering UFC on Fox 25 and does not ask Chris Weidman about that, I think that says a lot about them as a reporter. Now, on Monday's episode of now when it comes to Media Day, whatnot, didn't hear anything where someone asked Chris Weidman about it. But Chris Weidman was on Ariel Helwani's show on Monday, and I want to play you what Chris Weidman said about his experience over in Chechnya in 2015 and why he went over there.
You were probably, you know, with blinders on and were very focused on the task at hand, obviously. But a story came up in which you were kind of brought into, this story about Ramzan Kadyrov. Have you seen this? Have people asked you about this?
No.
Well, at one point, a few years back, you did travel to Chechnya on some sort of like promo tour, right?
I did. I did like a seminar.
That's right.
And out there.
And HBO did this story on the leader in Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, in which a lot has come out in terms of his ideologies and how despicable they are and just what kind of a person he is and how he's using MMA to further those ideologies, et cetera, et cetera. And you were kind of brought in as someone who has ties to him. From what I understand, based on my conversations with you, you kind of went out there, you were offered this opportunity, but you have no actual ties to him. So I was wondering if you happened to see this story or any of the stories that came out of it, and if you wanted to in any way address being linked to him or people saying that you have ties to this individual.
Yeah, I have no ties to him. I went out there. It was a one-time experience. I knew nothing about Chechnya. I just knew I was going to Russia to do a seminar. Not my manager, but another manager had asked me if I wanted to do it. And, you know, obviously it was like a paid thing. And I'm like, all right, sounds good. Let's do it. And then it was an interesting experience, a completely different type of culture than out here. It was, for me, it was a great experience going out there, just seeing a different way of living than what we're used to here. But yeah, no, I have no ties with them. I have never, I haven't spoke to them since, I was, what, 2015, you said?
I think it was that. I mean, you would know better than me, but I think it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago, but yeah, no, I haven't spoke to them or haven't been asked to go back out or anything like that. So no, I have nothing to do with them right now.
And when you fight, you're not representing his team or he's not paying you or anything. It was just kind of a one-off, right?
No. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. And did you meet him when you were there?
Yes, I did.
And what was that like?
He treated us like kings.
Uh-huh.
It was definitely an interesting experience. I mean, they treated us great. They were very respectful. It was obviously a different, completely different type of culture. So it was a cool experience to see a different way of living.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to try to clear that up because I remember when talking to you about it, that it was just kind of this one-off thing and you've had no connection to him since, but wanted to see if you had any thoughts. Of course, you were preparing for the fight, so I don't imagine you watched the HBO special, but if you do have some time, I would suggest checking it out just because you did travel over there and it's, I think, become a lot more, it's become a lot more dangerous over there as well for all kinds of people.
Now, look, I will say this. There would have been a couple of follow-up questions that I would have asked Chris Weidman if I was conducting that interview. You know, one of the things that start the interview, hear Ariel say, a story you were brought into. Well, the reason he was brought into that story is because he went over to Chechnya and he took part in, and he did a seminar over there. I think one of the questions I would say is, you say it's not your manager that set this up for you. I would say, well, who was the manager that set this up for you? I mean, that's a question you have to ask there. And, you know, I mean, look, if you're Chris Weidman, I mean, it's not like this is a new story. Like it's the question, you know, at the end of the day, he went over there and he got paid to do a seminar. And I think there's going to be more stories that are going to come out about this whole situation over there. But I did want to play that audio to hear what Chris Weidman, and I truly hope that, you know, and I think that Chris Weidman's management should have probably played him that Real Sports before he went on there and figure out exactly what to say, because Chris Weidman, I think, could have said a lot more than what he did. Of course, Chris Weidman did get a big win there last week at UFC on Fox 25 over Kelvin Gastelum. But I did want to mention what Chris Weidman, his response to doing that seminar in Chechnya in 2015. Now I want to get into quickly some of the news and fight bookings going on that haven't been announced over the last week or so in MMA. First up on the news, Neil Magny recently announced that he has been medically cleared to fight following an 8-month layoff. He wrote an Instagram quote, "During this time, I hit some low points both mentally and physically, and Neil Magny is going to return at UFC 215. He is going to be taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. Of course, that card is in Edmonton on September the 9th. That fight card going to be headlined by two title fights. Demetrius Johnson defending the flyweight title against Ray Borg. Amanda Nunes defending the women's bantamweight title against Valentina Shevchenko. Also added to that fight card, Mitch Clark versus Alex White. And Cajun Johnson versus Adriano Martins. Of course, we all know how vocal Cajun Johnson has been. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see how that does play out there during fight week for UFC 215. The Oklahoma Commission has dismissed Michael Chiesa's appeal, and Michael Chiesa has now challenged Mario Yamasaki to a grappling matchup. And Michael Chiesa, you know, issued this challenge on Ariel Helwani's show this week. And I thought Michael Chiesa, it was a fascinating interview to hear him talk about it, of why he did ultimately appeal the decision, and you know, and said that, you know, he wasn't surprised. He knew it was a long shot, but here's what Michael Chiesa had to say about challenging Mario Yamasaki to a grappling match.
second Mario Yamasaki came walking back into my locker room, me, Sam, and my coach Rick, we all looked at each other at the same time, like, oh fuck. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I'm not trying to sit here and bash the guy, but you know, he's got a track record for not the best officiating. I know he's a fifth degree black belt, and that's all fine and dandy, but that doesn't mean you're a fifth degree black belt in officiating. I feel like he's fallen behind a little bit. And I think that's pretty sad that when, you know, a referee walks into your room, you and your teammates are looking at each other like, oh shit, we have this guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like the work of like Herb Dean, Big John, Dan Mergliotta. I think the best referee in the business is Josh Rosenthal. Unfortunately, we can't have him, but it kind of sucks when an official walks into your locker room and you're like, crap, you know, it's kind of a crappy feeling, but, you know, it's the past. I'm moving forward and, you know, Onnit's having an invitational on September 30th. And, you know, this is my open challenge to Mr. Yamasaki to, I would like to test his fifth degree black belt in a friendly grappling match, you know, and let's see if he's, let's see if he's what he says he is. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that in a hostile way. I'm saying, hey, you know, if your fifth degree black belt's your backup for the decisions you made, then, you know, as a martial artist myself, you know, that's my open challenge to you to headline the Onnit Invitational September 30th.
And I highly doubt that Mario Yamasaki is going to accept that challenge, but maybe he will. But, you know, I really liked what Michael Chiesa did have to say about that entire situation. And, you know, look, I think that he was probably on the verge of going out in that fight, but he had not, you know, I don't think he had gone out at that point yet, was on the verge of it. But really interesting interview where he talked about that on Ariel Helwani's show on Monday. So if you have not heard that, I would definitely check that out. Also, in terms of some news, Jose Aldo is targeting to return in late 2017. And I was surprised when I read the piece on MMA Fighting that it's at 145 pounds. I thought he would move up to 155 pounds. You know, I think it would make a lot of sense to maybe have him on that Madison Square Garden show, which all signs do point to that the targeted main event of that is Max Holloway versus Frankie Edgar, co-main event being Cody Garbrandt versus TJ Dillashaw. So to me, that would make a lot of sense. Also, one other news item, Chris Kobosy did announce that he has signed with Glory Kickboxing. Is not officially closing the door on MMA, but going to give his shot there at Glory Kickboxing. Now, in terms of fight bookings that have been announced, a couple of fight bookings to mention. UFC Fight Night 115 on September the 2nd. Jermaine De Armande returns to 135 pounds, and she's going to take on Mary Renault. Also, Nick Hines is going to be part of that fight card. He's actually dropping to featherweight. UFC Fight Night 116 on September 16th in Pittsburgh. Going to be headlined by Luke Rockhold versus David Branch, which I would tell you is a matchup that when I heard them announce that during the broadcast on Saturday, I was just baffled. That's just an odd matchup. I know they wanted to do Yoel Romero, but you know, issues there, but, you know, just kind of a weird matchup. Also, a couple of other matchups out of that fight card, Sergio Moraes versus Kamaru Usman, Uriah Hall versus Christoph Jocko, Hector Lombard versus Anthony Smith. Also, Gilbert Burns is going to be on that fight card, taking on Jason Sagio, so looking forward to that. UFC Fight Night 117 on September 22nd. You got Formiga and Sasaki, a nice little flyweight matchup there. Also, Gokhan Saki going to make his debut in the UFC as he takes on Enrique de Silva. Bellator 183, September 23rd. Two matchups have been announced for that fight card. Lorenz Larkin's going to take on Paul Daly. Aaron Pico against a opponent to be a member. Also, Gochi Yamauchi versus Adam Piculotta. Now, when it comes to Aaron Pico, whether I retweeted this tweet the other day, and I don't know if you saw this or not. I'm going to play it for you. It's from Taiwan Claxton. He trains down in South Florida with the Black Zillions and the Combat Club down there. And he is currently an undefeated amateur fighter. He's 8-0, and he wants to fight Aaron Pico. He wants to make his pro debut against Aaron Pico. And in this, I'm going to play you the audio of this video. He has some tremendous one-liners.
So I'm scrolling through Twitter, and what do I see? I see Pico has already signed another fight for September 23rd on the main card. Have we not learned our lesson the first time? The kid's a hype train. He's a Sage Northcutt of Bellator. You know, his fight lasted all of 24 seconds. I can drag my nuts through broken glass for 24 seconds if I knew it'd be over with. You know, it's not that hard to find too many things that lasted longer than his MMA debut. A relationship that lasted on Tinder probably lasted longer than his MMA debut. A black guy in a horror film probably lasted longer than his MMA debut. Look, all I'm saying is, I'm 8-0 as an amateur, an average Division I wrestler. If you guys are really looking for somebody to for Pico to come and fight, I volunteer as tribute. Easy money.
And great one-liners there by Claxton. And we'll see if that ultimately can get him this fight against Pico. Interesting note on Pico, Jim Edwards. He had reported earlier this week that Aaron Pico is now cross-training at Body Shop MMA. Of course, that is where Antonio McKee is a head coach. And I think the interesting part about that is the fact of, you know, and Aaron Pico trains at multiple gyms, but his MMA gym was American Kickboxing Academy. So kind of interesting to see doing cross-training there at Body Shop there. And of course, he also trains at 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu and also Wildcard Boxing. And I think that ultimately you're going to see Bellator put Aaron Pico in a fight they believe he will win. I don't think they're going to put him in a fight that they think he has the potential to lose, because they have to build him up. And, you know, look, I said even before Bellator NYC and after Bellator NYC, I thought it was a mistake putting him in there against Zach Freeman. I think that's where management has to come in and to put I understand that his management thinks he's, you know, and obviously the ceiling is still high for Aaron Pico. It's not like we shouldn't be down Aaron Pico, but they should just been a little bit smarter in how they booked him. I'll tell you, I love that Goichi Yamauchi and Adam Piccolotti fight. That could be the winner of that fight, puts themselves really in a good situation, especially if it is Adam Piccolotti. One other fight booking to announce, and this one to me is an interesting one. It hasn't, as far as I know, it has not been officially announced by the UFC, but both fighters have confirmed it is a fight that's going to take place. And that's at UFC 260 on October 7th, a fight card that the UFC, my understanding is, they want Stipe Miocic to headline that fight card. They're going to have a lightweight matchup, Nick Lentz versus Will Brooks. Now, you may be wondering, Jason, why is this an interesting matchup? The reason it's an interesting matchup is because Nick Lentz recently left American Top Team. Multiple fighters have recently left American Top Team. And, of course, Will Brooks still changed that American Top Team. So I was wondering how quick it would take the UFC matchmakers to book a current ATT fighter against a recently departed ATT fighter. And I think with Robbie Lawler this week, it's going to be interesting to kind of see if why guys have left American Top Team is going to start coming to light. And I know every time that you kind of ask a fighter about it, they'll just sit there and say, you know, hey, it's something I just don't want to talk about publicly. But it's going to be interesting to see maybe if Robbie Lawler does kind of end up start talking about what is going on there at American Top Team. It's going to be interesting to see if that story does ultimately come out about what's going on there. Of course, Robbie Lawler, Donald Cerrone, man, who does not love that fight, man? I am all in on that fight. Cannot wait to watch that fight coming up on Saturday night, of course. So I'll talk a little bit more about UFC 214 at the end of this week's podcast. So that is everything going on in terms of fight bookings and news in mixed martial arts. So do want to get the interview portion of this week's edition of the podcast started. And first up, going to let you hear from Calvin Kattar. He is going to be making his UFC debut coming up on a Saturday night, going to be in the opening preliminary bout on FXX, as he is going to be taking on Andre Feely. A little interesting note, both these guys are represented by the same sports management group, but Calvin gets an opportunity on short notice. Of course, you may remember that Andre Feely was scheduled to take on Do Ho Choi, but of course Do Ho Choi had to pull out of the fight due to an injury. And I started off my interview with Calvin Kattar by talking to him about the challenges of a short notice fight, and if he feels that maybe the biggest challenge of this matchup is actually just getting all the medicals done so this fight would get approved.
Yeah, of course, with, you know, dotting I's and crossing the T's on not only opponent, but, you know, yourself, get yourself ready, firing on all cylinders. But the medicals for the UFC is another beast in itself, you know, with USADA. And, you know, it's good, though. It's good to have that type of regulation on the sport, make sure that, you know, it's a fair game for all involved. And, it's a new process to me at this level, but I learned the ropes as we go.
course, a lot of people may know that you're also a MMA promoter as well with Combat Zone. I mean, is it kind of, you know, does it open your eyes up, not just as a fighter, but also as a promoter, to see how other organizations in other states handle sanctioning fights?
Oh, of course. I'm always, you know, as a fighter coming up in the ranks, I fought for several different promotions. And I saw some things I liked from a fighter standpoint, some things I didn't like, and, you know, I try to keep the things that I liked with our promotion and do away with what I didn't with ours as well. And I'm always looking to critique that from a promotional standpoint. It's funny, man, I go to the shows, a lot of times I'm paying attention to the production level, things out back, and just overall seeing it. It does really open up my eyes in the UFC. You know, it exceeds expectations in that sense, man. They put a lot of money behind their shows and do a lot the night of the fight and the night before to accommodate the fighters.
It was just a couple of days ago that the UFC officially announced that you were stepping in on short notice, but how long have you actually known about this opportunity?
I knew 2 weeks. 2 weeks. So, you know, we're going to make the best of it. No opportunity waits for no one, and we're no different. So, just glad I got the call. Going to make the best of it. Going to go out and put on a show for everyone, man. It's a stacked card. I'm happy to be a part of it.
In terms of the preparations for fighting Andre, do you always have the mindset of I don't have training camps because I'm always training?
Yeah, you know, every fighter tries to kind of keep that mindset. My last fight wasn't about about 10 months ago, so we've been doing a lot. Really, aside from Andre, we've been doing a lot trying to just critique, you know, ourselves and be ready for an opportunity. And work on weaknesses while picking up our strengths, you know, all those things. So I've been working at it for a while now. I've been fighting for over half my life, and you know, it's going to be what I'm used to. You know, come this weekend, it's just a little bit shorter notice than we'd like, but we're going to go out there and we're going to put on a show.
As you have prepared and looking at Andre's film, is there anything that really stuck out to you of what you see that he does really well?
I mean, well, he does a lot of things really well, man, or else, you know, he wouldn't be where he's at today in the sport. He's very well-rounded, brings a lot to the table, but I wouldn't have got this opportunity if I didn't myself, you know, so I'm keeping both those things in mind come this Saturday, and it's going to play out the way it's going to play out.
In terms of Andre, obviously, coming out of Team Alpha Male, I mean, Do you have a general idea of what you think his game plan is going to be for you? Or do you feel like because you're the guy coming on short notice that maybe you have a little bit of an advantage over him?
There's definitely, you know, pros and cons to each. Him coming from a solid school, you know, he's definitely coming ready. With his last fight, I don't think his game plan is going to change too much. I'm sure he was planning on a scrap with his previous opponent. And he's going to get much of the same with me, you know. So I come from a tough school too, some solid fighters out of there as well. And, you know, two good schools, you know, two scrappy kids, it's going to make for a hell of a fight.
As we're recording this interview, you're nearly a 3-1 underdog in this matchup. Is that just motivation for you to just prove all the doubters wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. And I've been, you know, it's a little refreshing to be on the side for once. A lot of times in my career, I've been the favorite, a lot of pressure in this sense. Everyone strikes me loose. I'm going to go out there and give this kid a hell of a fight. And from there, now all pressure's on him.
You mentioned it's been 10 months since the last time you had a fight. How would you say you have grown as a martial artist over the last 10 months?
You know, we grow every fight, you know, through experience, especially my last one. It was a good one, breaking the ice. And, you know, we grow every fight. This one's going to be no different. We're going to grow through this one, and hopefully we'll still continue to learn what wins.
Do you, you know, they always talk about the UFC jitters. Do you think you're going to feel any of that, or is it just
honestly for myself right now in this point where I'm at in the moment? I'm trying to enjoy the moment. There's people dealing with real life issues, you know, dying of cancer, things every day. My perspective on this is I have the opportunity to fight, you know, where most people don't even get this opportunity to do this their whole career, their whole life. You know, they didn't get the opportunity to fight in the UFC. As far as the jitters come, I'm sure it'll be a little bit, you know, it'll feel a little bit more special being in there, but I plan on bringing in the mindset of just being appreciative of the opportunity and going out there and just having fun, man. Like I said, people dealing with real life issues, and this is a good problem to have, man. Short notice fight, UFC, it's a blessing.
Was fighting in the UFC a bucket list item for you?
Hell yeah. Of course. That's every fighter's bucket list. You know, and if it's not, you shouldn't be in the sport as it is, man. You get in the sport by playing in the NBA if you play basketball, playing in the MLB if you play baseball. You know, this is the pinnacle of the sport. This is what guys train their whole life for, and I'm excited about the opportunity.
As you have been, you know, waiting for the next fight opportunity, did you, in your mind, did you always kind of feel like, look, my next fight's going to be in the UFC? I mean, was that a thought process at all, or was it like, look, if it happens, it happens now. If it happens later, it happens then.
It's kind of always been like that, but I've always, you know, hoped it'd be the next one, always hoped it'd be the next one, but I never put the pressure on it. And go figure, this one, it just, you know, happens organically, comes out of nowhere. I've been working, like I said, you know, most of my whole life for this opportunity. So whenever it came, we're going to be ready.
A lot of people are going to be watching your fight that have never seen you fight and may not even know who you are at this point. What would you want those fans to know about who you are as a fighter or as a person?
You know, it's just, I'm a product of my team and my support around me. And I think you'll see that come fight night, man. We're going to come up prepared. We're going to put on a show. And regardless whether you're there for Andre, you're there for me, I plan on you know, take it to some Andre's fans that night, regardless, by putting on a show and you know, leaving it all in the cage that night.
Of course, I mentioned you're also a promoter of Combat Zone. I know you had a show back at the end of last month. So what's in the works for the Combat Zone for the rest of 2017?
Yeah, so we have a show Friday, September 29th in Manchester, and November 18th, Saturday for Thanksgiving, which all the fighters appreciate. They get to fight, eat, and then enjoy the holidays with their family. Really excited about both. Our last event was a sellout, and you know, it's really fulfilling to provide a stage for local fighters to compete and you know, show off their skills and there to get to that next level. It's really fulfilling to give them that opportunity. Like I had fought for the promotion I now run 9 times, and you know, it's a big you know, it's very fulfilling, man, being from this area, being a part of the promotion and you know, providing that opportunity for other guys to just compete on a local level to hopefully one day get the opportunity that I have now.
When you're on, you know, promoting a fight on fight night and you've got that promoter hat on, how observant are you of how other fighters are doing things? And maybe you see something that you say, okay, I'm going to add that to how I prepare for fights.
Always learning, man. Same thing when I watch the fights on TV, you know, just so I get a little bit of a better seat at the night of the show. And, you know, you hear it, you're cage side, and you're hearing the punches, you're seeing everything all at once. And, yeah, it's a lot to take in, man, but I really enjoy the promoter side of things. It's just as stressful as a fight, sometimes a little more stressful, I'd say, but equally as fulfilling. And it's great to be a part of both sides of the show, and I really enjoy it.
Northeast obviously is a great MMA scene, but it seems as of over the last couple months that the UFC has been paying particular attention to it. I mean, did you at all feel at some time that maybe in terms of the national MMA that the Northeast just wasn't getting the credit for the amount of great fighters that are up there?
You know, I'd say there's been a lot of talent definitely passing through. A couple pioneers, man, Joe Lazon, Marcus Davis, Kenny Florian, you know, just to name a couple, but they paved the way for us. But I always got to imagine Dana's got a soft spot for anybody from Boston, you know, looking to come out and compete. And hopefully I can fill that void.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight coming up on Saturday night. UFC 214, the televised prelims live on FXX, which I know on DirecTV is channel 259 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Calvin, I really appreciate time. And where can my listeners follow you at on social media?
Just at Calvin Kattar, CalvinKattar. Give me a follow and stay up to date on the upcoming bout. Appreciate the time.
And that was my conversation with Calvin Kattar. I really appreciate him coming on the podcast. So you talk about his fight coming up on Saturday night as he takes on Andre Fili, a part of the UFC 214 prelims. Of course, one of the most interesting parts about Calvin Kattar is the fact of, along with being a fighter, he's also a promoter there of Combat Zone. Of course, we talked about it there. And, you know, it's got, obviously, very interesting, you know, how he talked about kind of how he sees things you know, from both sides of the plate there as being a fighter, but also as being a promoter. So good luck to him coming up on Saturday night at UFC 214. Now, coming up next Tuesday on the fourth episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series is Kyler Phillips is going to be a part of that fight card. He is going to be taking on James Gray. Kyler is 4-0 in his career. He started off his pro debut, came back in March of last year. Two of his four wins have come by TKO slash KO. His other wins have come by submission, and most recently coming off a decision win at LFA 13. And I start off my conversation with Kyler asking him how he got his nickname, The Matrix.
Well, my nickname used to be The Storm when I was a kid. My dad gave me that nickname because I had to switch to turn, you know, on when it's time to go. But when I was about in middle school, my dad gave me the nickname The Matrix. And that's because my game was on a whole different level. Like, I'm just in a... Basically, people have, like, a three-dimensional way of training and in their system. But it's like a chess game. I'm six steps ahead. I'm on a whole different game, whole different ballpark. And it's because my mind has been trained since a young age to thrive in these things.
They always talk about the martial arts journey. So when did martial arts become a part of your life?
Well, I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when I was 3 years old at the Gracie Academy. My dad put me in that, and then he also had me do some taekwondo, some boxing. And I started wrestling in middle school, got into freestyle, Greco, folk style in high school, and then I've always been doing martial arts throughout elementary, middle school, high school. I just fell in love with it. My dad didn't really force it on me too much. So I competed as a younger child, but I wasn't forced too much. So when I turned about 12 years old, I was really, really, I had a lot of passion for the martial arts, and I really wanted to seek more out of myself in the arts. And I felt like I could embrace my personality and embrace my body, and it just felt so right, you know. So I kept doing it. I kept training. I wrote down my goals when I was in middle school. I had written down Jiu-Jitsu World Champion, Abu Dhabi Champion, and UFC Champion. So I became Jiu-Jitsu World Champion in 2012. I still want to become a Jiu-Jitsu Black Belt World Champion one day, and I'm still chasing the same exact goals.
You know, you've been at this, obviously, for a long time towards your martial arts journey. You mentioned about those when you wrote down those goals. Was it shortly before that point of when you realized that you wanted to be a fighter at some point?
I wanted to be a fighter, I'd say, when I was 6 years old with my dad. We'd watch the Pride fights. We'd watch the UFC fights. And we actually would go to, like, the Pride Camp of Vegas. And we went and watched that. And we were just so into it. My dad, he was teaching jiu-jitsu in the garage, and we had a whole setup. We had a whole gym, so I was always training, and I always had challenges, always, every weekend. My dad would make me, you know, wrestle a kid in the park or slap box with somebody, and they were always bigger than me, always older than me, always more athletic than me. So the only thing I'd have to rely on was my mind and my technical ability to beat them. And so that's why, you know, now I got in a deeper, you know, a deeper understanding of the martial arts. And as long as physics is on my side, I understand physics inside and out, there's nothing that can beat it, you know?
And you're coming off that win in LFA. I was looking at your record on Tapology. Only one decision pro and amateur career, and of course that's coming in your last matchup. Would you say you learned the most about yourself in your last fight as opposed to the rest of your amateur and pro fights?
No, not necessarily. I knew that whether it's going to go the distance or in the first round, I'll win. But I've had a lot more challenges, and I've learned about myself so many times before, and so many, you know, competitions, and so many ups and downs. So I've experienced both sides of the spectrum from all throughout my life, you know. So I've had big giant dudes on top of me holding me in a headlock for 30 minutes straight. I've been, you know, I've put people to sleep when I was in the third grade. I put somebody in the eighth grade, put them to sleep. There's just been so many times where I've had challenges and I had to face my, I had to face it, but with using the, using my mind, you know.
They talk about overcoming adversity. What would you say is the biggest adversity you've had to overcome as a martial artist?
The biggest adversity, of course, is just every single day. It's not the fight. It's not the battle or the competition once you get there, but it's, you know, every single day when you make the decision to do one more rep, you make the decision to, you know, calm yourself when you get angry, you know, and you make the decision to be smart in situations and to push yourself when you need to. So I feel, right now, I feel very balanced. I feel like I have the athletic ability of the beast, but I also have the human mind to really beat anybody.
What is the hardest part of this game for you? Is it just simply the day in, day out grind inside the training room, or is it fight night?
No, it's always the grind. Every day should be is a challenge, you know. There's always going to be times you need to take a break, and I think I train so hard, I need to get better at recovery because sometimes I push myself so far, and it's better, you know, to recover yourself right, eat right. So I'm learning a lot of those things now to, you know, eat right, sleep, you know, get my full rest and recovery, and get back at it again.
I think the term a lot of guys throw around it is training smarter. Is that something that you're trying to achieve that and figuring out what works best for you?
Yeah, so I started doing some of that. What's it called? It's kind of like a strap you put around your chest.
Okay.
And it takes measurement. The HRV. Yeah, that's what it's called. You know, the heart rate variability. I started doing that a little bit. This guy gave me one of those. And even without that, though, it's about trying to understand your body. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of fighters, we know how to push hard. We know how to embrace the grind. But learning how to treat your body the right way, getting your massage, you know, stretching right, sleeping enough, that's really, really important.
A lot of guys have gotten into cryotherapy. Is that something you've tried?
Yeah, I actually did that 2 weeks ago. It's just a little bit expensive, so we'll wait till I get to the big show so I can start doing that.
Was it one of those things of, I mean, obviously because of the cold temperature, I mean, did you kind of have to brace yourself before stepping into the tank?
Oh, I've done it 3 times so far. This one I went to in Scottsdale was pretty cool. The guy had a bunch of cool gadgets and stuff. He actually made me put my take a deep breath and then bring my head under, you know, so.
Oh, wow.
And it was nice, yeah. So I think that's good. Also, like, just little things, different ways of training helps always.
And, of course, the opponent here, James Gray, he is 4-1. What's your thoughts on James as an opponent?
On August 1st, he's going to step across the octagon from me and he's going to step into the matrix. I am the matrix. I control all his thoughts, his actions. He's stepping into my world, basically. So I'm going to unplug him from the system.
The way I've kind of called this series, it's like a on-site job interview. Because, I mean, where are you going to go to be able to fight in front of Dana White, Sean Shelby, and Mick Maynard all at the same time? Is that the way you've kind of viewed this? This is just simply a job interview, and I just got to go out there and show them what I can do?
Yep, it's just people. Everybody, you know, there's people there. People will always be watching, and it doesn't matter, you know what I mean? So, like, every day you visualize those moments. You visualize every single moment. So by the time I get there, I've already seen it 1,000 times, and that's something, you know, I've got a lot of help with my coaches, John Crouch and Hanchi Nico has me visualize so much. And he's taking me in as a pupil and taking me into Nikitokai right here. This is the martial art I train. Consists of 8 different martial arts, and man, it's a beautiful thing.
Of course, everyone knows John Crouch there, the head coach there at MMA Lab. What would Is there something about John that we don't know, but as fighters, you know about him that just makes him a unique coach?
I knew you guys were going to ask that question. He's goofy sometimes. He's funny, super funny. He says some jokes, and I'll try to grab him when I see him on the mat. I'll try to grab him and choke him out. But his defense is good.
But does every gym kind of need that coach that can just change the mood up a little bit in terms of, you know, when guys are feeling down, just kind of lighten the mood up?
Of course, yeah, of course. So, I mean, even we've got Benson there, and he makes sure we push. You know, he's a big brother to me. And there's a lot of balance. The more people, the more variety we have, the more type of people, you know. That's what I love about the martial arts is the different types of arts and the different skills and the different perceptions on martial arts is not everybody is one way. And that's one thing I believe. And that's why, you know, my nickname, The Matrix, is just there's so many different ways to go. There's so many, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, but 1 + 3 also equals 4. So it's not always the same equation, you know what I mean? You still get the same result, different equation.
Final thing, and I really do appreciate time, as this fight coming up here, Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, just a couple of days away. What would you want fans to know about you? I mean, obviously you've talked about your life as a martial artist, but is there something else you would want the fans to know about you heading into this matchup?
I just want them to understand a little bit what the Matrix is about. And the only way to understand it is to change your perception by taking the red pill.
And of course, this fight come up here on Tuesday, August the 1st. Kyle, I really appreciate time. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Kai Matrix. On my Instagram's Kai Matrix, named Kyler Phillips. Just keep looking up. It's going to be a lot of excitement.
And that was my conversation with Kyler Phillips. I really appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his fight coming up next Tuesday on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series as he looks to go to 5-0 in his career. Now, also a part of that show will be John Castaneda. If you have been watching Combates America, you are very familiar with John Castaneda. He has won 9 in a row. He is coming off a knockout win against Chris Beal back there in May. He is a lifelong wrestler growing up there in Minnesota. Actually stopped wrestling in college to pursue his dream of being an MMA fighter. And I started off my interview with John asking him how preparations have been for this fight.
Preparation has been great. You know, it's no different than any other camp. I'm always prepared. You know, I'm a full-time athlete. I train 6 days a week, twice a day, regardless of whether I have an upcoming fight or not. So I'm well prepared, as I am for all my other fights.
So would you say you even have a training camp, or would you just say, I'm just constantly training, so I guess you're always in a training camp?
No, absolutely. You know, there is a different level of intensity when you are in training camp. It's a different like level of, I guess, just everything. You know, my mood switches, my dieting switches, the intensity of practice switches, the length of practice switches. So there definitely is a time of a fight camp, but I'm constantly training. You know, I'm constantly getting better. I'm constantly drilling, working out, like I said, 6 days a week, regardless. But there is a fight camp, you know, that's just more strategic and more, I guess, based on one individual, you know, figuring out my next opponent, essentially.
Lifelong wrestler through the Minnesota scene up there, but it was in college where you decided that, you know what, wrestling days are over, it's time for MMA. What kind of went through your mind of why that was the right time to make that switch?
Yeah, so I was actually, like you said, I wrestled middle school, high school, and then I went off to college at a Division II school, MSU. I was wrestling with them for my freshman year, and then I got introduced to the MMA program actually by luck. You know, it wasn't anything that I seeked out. I was just walking by. I saw this matted room and I saw people like drilling wrestling in there. And I was like, wait a minute, who are these guys? You know, I went in, I checked it out, and they were like, yeah, man, you know, they knew that I was on the wrestling team because I told them. And they said, you know, you can wrestle with us and you can also punch people in the face and grapple them, submit them, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, obviously I was very intrigued. And so, it was right after my freshman year that I opted out of wrestling and just participated in MMA full time, along with being a full time student.
and a double major in college. So what made you decide to be a double major?
Yeah. So my mom, obviously my whole family is Hispanic, Latin American. I graduated with a double major in criminal law and Spanish. That's an easy one. Spanish is just, I'm bilingual, so I'm fluent in Spanish. So it helped out my GPA and it looks good on paper. You know, obviously you can be bilingual in it or not. They're going to hire you if you're bilingual and you have a degree in it. You know, it just looks better on paper. Criminal law, I've always wanted to help families like my own. I wanted to get into the helping families in immigration, Latin American families in particular. I know when I was younger, my mom dealt with some things in immigration that impacted my family. And so from then on, I told myself that I really wanted to help families in the same situation scenario. So that was the deciding factor between before that. So, yeah.
And everything has gone great for you here in your MMA career. Of course, most recently, your past several fights have been in Combates America. People could say you had become the face of that promotion, but this is a huge opportunity here on Dana White's Tuesday Contender Series. And I've had a chance to talk to a lot of guys who are either have fought on this show or are going to fight on this show. And, you know, I guess they all have unique stories of kind of how they found out. Some of them, like, what is a Contender Series? What are you talking about? I fight for this promotion. You know, for you, when you get the phone call from your manager, were you even aware at all of what this was?
No, to be honest, I wasn't. It was a Saturday night, and it was actually the same night as the UFC Auckland, the New Zealand fights. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy by the name of Zach Ottawa, who is part of my same management team, essentially. He's part of Team Iridium. Mm-hmm. And I was watching him fight, and he won the fight. And I was like, oh, that's super cool. Like, good for Team Iridium. Literally seconds later, I get the call from my manager saying, hey, John, we got you. I just spoke to Sean Shelby directly. We got you on August 8th show for this Dana White Contender Series. So my fight was originally supposed to be 1 week up, but then it got bumped back to August 1st. I didn't know what it was at first, and I started doing my research, you know, because it had been just a brand new show at the time. It wasn't even aired yet. First week one wasn't even aired yet. So I started doing my own show, and I was super excited about it. You know, obviously I knew that this was a big opportunity fighting in front of UFC Dana White and the matchmaker for the UFC, Sean Shelby. You know, that's a big deal. That's like basically the door right there. You know, you just got to perform well and get the win. And yeah, that's what I'm here to do. You know, ever since I graduated school 2 years ago, I moved from Mankato, Minnesota, where I was attending school, up to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to train at the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy under Greg Nelson. He is just a wizard in everything MMA. You know, he's trained guys like Sean Sherk, Brock Lesnar, Dave Manet, you know, guys who have been at that highest level. And I just know that I'm the next one there, next one coming out of the gym that's going to be in the UFC. Since I've moved to the academy, I've seen every aspect of my game develop and grow, and I continue to grow every single fight. You know, I'm super young, and I'm nowhere near my peak. So I know that this fight is definitely a good fight for me right now.
When you say you're nowhere near your peak, and let's just say a peak on a scale of 1 to 10 is 10, where are you at right now?
You know, like I just said, I've been at this gym for two years. That's it. 2 years training at a high-level gym, and I've noticed every single fight my skills have increased. I would honestly say that I'm at a 5 or a 6 right now. I have so many years of developing my game left, and I feel like I'm already pretty well-rounded. So it's, you know, it's awesome.
You have a great record, your opponent undefeated record, but are you not impressed with his record?
You know, obviously he is a tough dude. You know, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that he's not a tough dude. He's training out of a good camp, a solid camp with, you know, obviously the likes of Max Holloway, Russell Duane, you know, guys who are at the highest level. He's not going to be a slouch. But no, I'm not impressed with his record at all. You know, his last fight to get to 6-0 was against a guy who was 0-0. The fight before that was like a guy who was 0-1. Before that, it was 1-1. You know what I mean? He's beating guys with finishes who have no experience whatsoever. I'm beating guys with finishes that have been at the highest level, who have competed in the UFC, top up-and-comers, guys on winning streaks. You know, I'm beating way better opponents than him. And that doesn't really say much, but I can tell you this, that he's going to not really see what's – I guess he's not going to really expect me to he's expecting me to fold like all of his past six opponents have. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he has to understand that he's not fighting someone who is just going to fold the second that they get punched, like these 0-0 guys, these 0-1 guys. I'm a veteran. I have 15 professional fights. That's a lot of the guys in the UFC don't even have that many fights. I have the most fights out of anyone on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series on week four. On my week, I have the most fights out of any of those guys. I've fought every single type of person, and I know that I have seen someone, the skill level, the body type, the speed, the strength that Chaedon is. And I know for a fact that he hasn't seen a guy like me in the cage.
And anyone who's watched the episodes already of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, we all know that the guys that are getting signed are the ones out there having exciting fights and putting it all out on the line. But for you, is it a thin line between being aggressive but being reckless as well?
No, it's not. It's definitely not a thin line. And this has nothing to do with my schooling or being educated by any means. But I would say that I'm a very cerebral fighter. I take it slow the first round. If you watch any of my fights, I like to feel out my opponents. But then second and third round, I'm strategic. I'm not wild. I'm not reckless. I'm going for finishes, seeing as my last three fights have been finishes, but I'm doing it in a smart way. And that's what I think has been the difference of my mindset when I've gotten to this high-level gym at the academy. So obviously I'm on an 8-fight win streak now, and that's the big difference. There's times in the fight when you're supposed to hit them hard. There's times in the fight where you're supposed to pepper them with slow punches, setting them up, takedowns. Everything's a game. Everything's a chess game. And I think that I've nailed this chess game down. And that comes from experience of fighting all different types of guys, different calibers. And I don't think that Chaedon has evolved like that yet.
And, of course, we'll see if you can get the contract offer here coming up. In terms of if that were not to happen, even if you go, we have seen guys go out there, have great performances, and they just don't get signed. Would that be a letdown or just a learning experience for you?
No, absolutely not. I know that in our clause, in our contracts, there's a 30-day grace period to negotiate with the UFC. So obviously these guys who are exciting guys, knockouts, are getting signed right away. But a lot of these guys that haven't been signed yet could possibly still be signed. There's a 30-day grace period of negotiation. The show hasn't even been out for 30 days. So I know that, I'm prepared to get this win. I'm prepared to get the contract right away. If I don't get the contract right away, I'm still not going to fret. But no, I would definitely take it as a learning experience. Like I said, I've fought guys at the highest level already, guys who have fought in the UFC, guys who are up and coming, undefeated guys, guys on fight streaks. I'm just going to keep doing what I know, and that's continue to win fights. And eventually they can't really deny you, regardless of whether it's an exciting fashion or not. You know what I mean?
The nickname Sexy Mexi, who gave it to you?
My coach in college, actually. So I'm sure you've heard of the freshman 15 in college, gaining a lot of weight. That was me after I quit wrestling and joined the MMA team. Obviously at the time I was a full-time student. I was working a part-time job and I was trying to do MMA full-time. Obviously I wasn't as disciplined. I wasn't as focused and motivated as I was now. So I gained a little bit of weight. And when I started picking up my intensity in the practice room and knowing that I was going to have more amateur fights, I started taking it more serious, started losing some weight. And my coach in college was like, dang, like, John, you're looking lean. You're looking sexy. And then one of my training partners called me, oh, Sexy Mexi. And since then it's just stuck. So,
and, final thing, let's end it on this. I always like to find something out about you just as a person, something you would want the fans to know about you away from fighting. What would that one thing be that you would want fans to know about you?
Fans to know about me, or what I would like for fans to know about me, is that I'm just getting started with my career. I'm an exciting fighter. I'm a finisher, and I just want them to keep an eye out for me. Like I said, I've only been in this game for a few years. I've only been at a high level gym for a few years, and I'm just now getting started. So there's a lot left of John Castaneda left.
And let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, so my Instagram name is John_Castaneda. You can find me on Twitter at SexyMexi135. And then just Facebook, if you'd like, John Anthony. Otherwise, yeah, that's it.
Great stuff there from John Cassaday. I look forward to watching his fight coming up next week on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. And that interview was done by via video, and that video interview will be up on the MMAReport.com later on this week. Now, coming up on August 11th, it is CES MMA 45, and this is a fight card that's going to have multiple title fights. One of those title fights is a heavyweight title fight, as our next guest is going to be challenging Ashley Gooch, and that is Juliano Coutinho. We have not seen Juliano since June of last year when he lost to Justin Willis at WSOF 31. And I started off my conversation with Juliano just asking, hey, man, it's been a long time since we've seen you. Are you just itching to get back into competition?
Man, I got goosebumps, you know. Since my manager Tyson gave me a call saying that they offered me the title fight, man, I've been, you know, itching to get back in the cage. You know, I was probably 6 months away, you know, from training because I tore my hamstring, you know, and then it was a major injury, you know. So I was doing everything accordingly to so I could get back training 100%, you know. So now I'm, you know, 3 weeks out to the fight. I can't be feeling any better, you know. Ready to go.
Would you at all label this a bucket list of winning the CES title?
Man, this is going to be a dream coming true. You know what I mean? Especially on the backyard, you know, and representing New England. I think my chances are really, really big on this fight. You know, I think it's a great matchup for me. And since, you know, my last fight, June 17, it was a loss against Justin Willis. And since that day, man, I'm trying to get back in it, you know, redeem myself and be on top again.
Why do you feel like this is a good matchup for yourself?
Well, you know, as I always been fighting strikers, you know, a couple of the last fights, I felt comfortable, you know, standing with some of the fighters, Chaz Morgan, my last fight as well with Justin Willis. You know, at the first round, we pretty much, you know, were standing up. And on the second round, I got caught, you know. But I was feeling pretty good. And this time, I'm going to be able to display the jiu-jitsu, you know. I'm taking this fight to the ground, and I think that's what's his weak point. That's why I think it's a great matchup for myself.
Is it tough to be in fight camp when you're about to celebrate a birthday?
Man, it's going to be tough, man, because usually we have a tradition. You know, we get our teammates, everybody in the gym all together at my house. We do a huge barbecue. And it's not only my birthday, but it's my daughter's birthday on the same day.
Oh, wow.
So we make a huge party. But this time we're gonna have to postpone it. You know, we gotta do it after I win the belt.
You know, and obviously, you know, some of your training partners have had some big opportunities that ultimately did not go their way. In Matt Bissett and Greg Rebello, is there anything you can kind of take away, you know, from what happened with them as maybe a learning lesson for yourself?
No, man, it's part of the game. You know, there is nothing that I can. Obviously, you learn a lot, you know, yourself. It's easy for me to be sitting over here and judging them, you know. But I think those guys, they are the top, you know. Rebello, Matt Bissett, they've been fighting in New England for, you know, for the last 10 years, you know, and bringing or MMA around New England up to the top. You know, they always been representing. And I don't think nothing that I can say, you know what I mean, over here that's going to say, oh, he did this mistake or he did that mistake. They all put it on the line. We're in the business of winning and losing, you know, so that's the name of the game.
As you have prepared to fight Ashley, is there something that just really sticks out to you that just you, when you put in the tape and you watch him fight that you just go, man, this really impresses me about him?
Well, as always, you know, the heavyweight division, the only thing that I'm concerning, as always, not only for Gooch, it's the big hands, you know what I mean? Heavyweight's got the power. One little mistake, and then he can clip you and lights out, you know. But we are preparing ourselves really good for this one, you know what I mean, to make sure we keep our hands up and we know when to shoot in for the takedown.
Are your coaches doing any unique training scenarios to make sure that your hands stay up?
That's pretty much every day of my life. You know, I was just driving back from John Johnston. He's actually the first heavyweight to hold the belt for CES. So I've been training with him for the last, you know, probably for the last 5 years. I'm just driving back from his school. We're going over scenarios that possibly that can happen in a fight, and we are preparing ourselves to get the W on August 11th.
How much of your training is about the potential bad scenarios that you could find yourself inside the fight? I mean, is that a good portion of the training?
Well, this is, I see it this way. I go in, I watch the tapes, I see what he's good at, and I prepare myself for that. And also, I see where he loses his fight and what's his weak points, and I work myself to get stronger on that point. You know, so I think we got a huge possibility over here, you know, because, you know, it's simple. Striking, it's you got to keep your hands up, your footwork. You got to be able to be aware of, you know, when he starts throwing hands. And it's totally different when you take a fight to the ground. And that's my world. You know what I mean? That's what I do. I know a couple of my last fights, I didn't take the fight to the ground. And but on this one, you guys gonna see it, a little display of my jiu-jitsu.
Anyway, and I mentioned about your birthday. You are turning 39 years old. A lot of people will start to kind of wonder, you know, how much more is left in the tank in terms of MMA competitions. Have you even thought of that, or are you just taking it one fight at a time? And just kind listen to your body, because I know when talking to other athletes from various sports, one thing they've always said to me is that your body will ultimately tell you when it is time to stop being a competitor. Is that the way you look at it?
Exactly. I the way I see age is just a number. I feel great. I go in there. Obviously, my recovery is not as fast anymore. So these days, I have to be a little bit smarter before I go into the gym and just balls to the walls, training hard with everyone, getting punched. And these days, I think I'm being a little smarter about it. You know what I mean? I'm trying to take care of my body better, you know, eating better. And I think age is just a number. I feel great, but I'm only going to say something after the fight. You know what I mean? I got a lot of things in my mind right now, but, you know, that's the part of the game. You know, you get 3 weeks out, you just kind of go through a lot of motions. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make a judgment off of that. You know, I just want to get in the cage, perform, get the win, and from there we're going to decide what we're going to do.
We all know about your credentials on the ground. Any plans for any grappling competitions?
Well, this is one of the things that I was talking to one of the professors at the school. You know, I think if they see me competing more in the jiu-jitsu world, sports jiu-jitsu, I think I'm going to motivate more of my students, you know. So I think I'm going to start getting into the jiu-jitsu a little more, you know, because it's not as hard as the MMA to get ready for. And maybe I can do, you know, two tournaments in a year and then be focused, depending on the MMA, you know, a little bit as well. But I don't want to take it away from the MMA completely. You know what I mean?
Any preference on whether it's a gi or no gi competition?
Well, I love the gi. I was raised with the gi, you know what I mean? So I can, by the way, I hate that no gi stuff. You know, I'd rather be training in the gi most of the time, you know, because we got more tricks with the gi on.
I know, as actually on my podcast this week, I had Kenny Florian on. He's part of a jiu-jitsu promotion that's starting up later this year, going to be in New York. They're doing, you know, eight-man tournaments, round robin. Is that something that that you're interested in?
Man, if I got the invitation, man, I'll be right there. You know what I mean? I'll be more than happy to do it.
But, of course,
that would be cool.
Yeah, but of course you got the fight here coming up here. How many times have you visualized Pat Sullivan putting that belt around your waist?
Man, I've been dreaming since the day that I got the call. You know, I've been seeing scenarios. I've been actually, my screensaver, it's a picture with me holding John Johnson's belt, the first one that to hold the belt on heavyweight division. And I inspire from that. I wake up in the morning to turn my clock, my alarm off, and then I see that picture. That's an inspiration to me. So I'm going after. I'm going to go get that belt.
Any inspirational quotes that you've been kind of, you know, been on your mind throughout this training camp?
Well, I always the inspiration for me, I think it's, you know, the fighting for my team, you know, for my students, my family, and they always seem like that when I'm getting ready for fight, and they get very anxious, you know what I mean? Not to talk about my wife and my daughter, you know what I mean? So it's nice to see how much people love you when you you actually putting on the line, you know. I see a lot of people calling me to try, hey, you need any help, you need anything, you wanted me to cover a couple classes for you so you can focus on your training and such a thing. That's the inspiration for me, because that's what a team looks like, you know, when you need the help and they come up with a solution, you know what I mean? So I'm really inspired by my team, you know, teammates and everyone around me right now.
I look forward to seeing your fight on August 11th, but let everyone know where they can follow you out on the various social media platforms.
Yes, sir. I got Instagram and Twitter, the same username is BananaC30, and on Facebook, you can go on Facebook by Giuliano Cotino. That's my first and last name, you know, and then I got Snapchat too, Banana Jiu-Jitsu, you know, they can reach me on that.
And there you have Giuliano Cotino. Going to be very interesting to see how his fight with Ashley Gooch does play out and what could be next for him if ultimately he does walk away with the CES title. Now, also on this fight card is going to be Leon Davis. He is going to be taking on Andrew Osborne. 2017 has been a great year so far for Leon Davis. He has got two wins this year, a submission win in 40 seconds against Ralph Johnson, which he won the welterweight title on that fight card, and then he's coming off a successful defense of the AMMO welterweight title back in June, as he got a win against JL, a submission win. And start off my conversation with Leon Davis by asking him, would he call 2017 an A-plus year to this point in terms of his MMA career?
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far to me. You know, I've been working hard, training hard, and just keeping my eye on the prize, that's all, you know. So, you know, I'm blessed right now for all the success I've been having in 2017.
And one of the things outside of MMA is studying to be a police officer. So how's that going?
It's going good. It's going good. You know, the results for the test are coming back in September. So I should see where I am on the civil service list. And hopefully I'm in the top, you know, top 15, top 10. And, you know, hopefully I get the job. I'm just praying I get it, you know.
Is there anything that has surprised you about the process of becoming a police officer?
Just like how long it takes. I've never, like, it's like been like a 3-year thing for me, you know, just studying for it, getting ready, doing the test, waiting for the test results, you know, everything. So it's pretty, I know it's going to pay off in the long run, but it's pretty, you know, it's pretty long, drawn-out process.
What made you want to be a police officer?
All my friends and cousins are, so, you know, I'm going to try to go in that path, too. I've always been, like, you know, liked all the, you know, police officer shows, like Hawaii Five-0, Cops, Skarsky and Hutch, you know, Chips, you know, even the new movie Chips. So I've always, like, had a fascination with you know, police officers.
The story behind your last fight, it was a very busy day for you. So how do you get away with having a fight scheduled on the day your sister's getting married?
I have no idea. It was pretty interesting. So, you know, it was interesting. It was an interesting day. it was a very stressful but interesting day.
So how's that conversation go when you have to tell her, oh, by the way, the day you're getting married is I'm fighting?
Interesting conversation. Because I was like, you know, I have to fight. You know, it's going to be on your wedding day, but I'm going to be at your wedding, but it's at the Big E too. So don't worry about it, because I'll be at the wedding before and after the fight, and I'll give you all my ticket sale, you know, commission money. So she didn't mind that, you know.
So you had to throw the little bait out there about the commission ticket sale to kind of get her on board?
Absolutely. You know, I had to, like, kind of smooth talk, you know, like smooth talk my way in just so I could get the fight. You know,
and then so she gets married, you go fight, and then you end up at the reception, right? Is that the way it goes?
Oh yeah. Oh, so my day was, you know, usually I have a strict, you know, day of the fight. You know, I'll go, I'll train a little bit, go get some sushi, go sleep and everything, and then I'll go to a venue and I'll compete. Not my last fight. I woke up. I had to run to, get some flows in and everything with my buddy, Marty. You know, we just did some wrestling drills, you know, just so I could get the nerves out. And then from there, I had to run to the hotel, shower, get my suit on, help my, I ran to my mom's house, woke up my brother, got him, helped him get ready. And then we both ran over to the hotel in Springfield. So that was like that was before 12 too. So then I got to the hotel. I went up to my mom's room. I tried to sit down and watch TV, but you know how it's a wedding, everything, everyone wants to take pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, you know, so I wasn't able, you know, just to relax. So I was like getting all like amped up, because I'm like, okay, my sister's getting married and I have a fight, you know. So then I went down to the groomsman's room. I wasn't in the wedding, but I was, you know, mm-hmm. I was helping out. Of course, they have pizza and all liquor. That's all they have, pizza and all liquor. And I was like, good. Just what I need right now. Thank you. So I'm not going to lie. I did have a few pieces of pizza. And then, so from there, so everyone got in the limo. I ended up driving my car over so I could, when I had to leave the wedding, I could drive over to the other end of the Big E and compete. So I got to the venue, and I was a usher. I was helping everyone sit down and mm-hmm. stuff and do all that stuff. They got married, and then we ended up taking all the pictures and the family pictures and everything. And then my mom had me walk her in. So when I walked her in, as I walked her in, she walked towards like all the like line with like the bridesmaids and groomsmen before my sister and her husband got in. And as I walked in, she went one way and I went right out the door and went and competed. So I ended up going. I only had like literally, I'm not even, if I was to over exaggerate this, maybe 20 minutes from when I got into the venue to when I fought.
Wow, that's crazy. And
it was like, that's like hands wrapped, getting checked out by doctors and, you know, getting my warm up in. And then someone kicked over a water bottle in the back room, so there was water everywhere. So on top of trying to warm up, I'm trying not to blow out my knee because it's so slippery. And so I end up fighting and everything. I won, came back. My cousin was with me, so he had his suit and everything. And I ended up, you know, they had showers there, so luckily I could shower, thank God. I showered, and I put my suit right back on. I looked at my cousin. I was like, you ready to go eat and go drink? Let's go. So we ended up just leaving and going, no, you can't get all the attention, dog. And, this is Tucker, by the way. So this is my buddy, my best friend right here.
is not interesting. But so yeah, it was a fun night. You know, we ended up just after the fight. You know, I kind of stole my sister's thunder because I walked in and everyone was like so excited that I won the fight that they kind of forgot that it was her wedding and they all like were trying to take pictures and everything with me. So that was interesting. So we had a good time. You know, it was a good time afterwards. We all went out and, you know, celebrated after. So it was a good time.
And a fairly quick turnaround for you, less than 2 months here. Andrew Osborne, who's 7-10 and won no contest in his career. In terms of this fight and Andrew, how do you what gets you excited about this matchup? Is it just another opportunity to compete, or is there something about you feel Andrew's going to test you in a certain way?
Andrew's going to test me. He's just fought all studs. He's just fought all studs. He's tough. He's a good wrestler, good striker. He's strong. He's athletic, you know, so he's going to test me. And if you look at his record, he's fought most of his losses are to guys that are either in the UFC or World Series of Fighting. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's fought all tough guys, you know. It's definitely going to test me and everything. With like where I'm at personally in my career, you know, it's going to see where I can be. And I'm just really excited, you know, for this fight. I'm just, you know, and I just like to compete too. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, testing myself against, you know, the best guys around. But hopefully, you know, I get this, I'll be 6-1 and, you know, CES. And, you know, I think I am one of the guys that deserve to have a title shot at 55.
Have you talked to CES about that in terms of, you know, wanting that title matchup? Or is it one of those things of, you know, look, you can just let your talking in the cage, you know, that's what you need to do it to let them know?
You know, I'm a real believer in fate. You know, I want to get to the UFC. So whatever Tyson says goes. To me, it's like, I'm just like, whatever, man. I just want to go and be one of the first people from Springfield to compete and win in the UFC cage. You know, that's all I want, honestly. That's all I want to do, and that's my goal, you know.
Your management team has had a couple of fighters that have gotten to the Contender Series. Some of them, you know, won, some lost. You know, two guys that you're very well familiar with did not get a win. Is the Contender Series something that interests you? Because I labeled it as a blessing and a curse, where it's a blessing because if you get in there, you win, you could be in the UFC. But if you lose, you take a couple of steps back. Is that something that interests you?
Whatever Tyson says, you know, whatever Tyson and my coaches say, I'm they're in charge. I'm just, my job is just to train and get up here ready, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know Tyson's big in the golf, along with Rob and Rico. Do you go golf with the boys?
And I don't go golf with them. They don't want my skills. You ever see Happy Gilmore?
That's me. Yeah.
That's me. I just start throwing, you know, all the, I don't even know what those things are called, the putters or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't golf. I'm from Springfield, man. I don't golf.
Well, what is a hobby? You know, like when I talked to Robbie, you know, he said, hey, that's what gets his mind off the fight game. For you, is there a certain hobby you have that gets you mind off the fight game?
Yeah, like I love going to Comic-Con. I love playing video games. You know, if I could show you, all the comic books I have and everything. I'll read comics. You know, mm-hmm. I just enjoy, you know, comics. I like watching all Marvel movies, you know, DC movies. I like actually doing reviews for those kind of movies with my friends. So it's pretty cool. You know, I'm actually a comic book nerd.
What's the last comic book you read?
You're going to laugh. I'm getting ready for X-Men Dark Phoenix, so I've been reading Dark Phoenix Saga. You know, seeing how they, you know, stay mm-hmm. true to the comic and not, you know, go off, you know, because X-Men The Last Stand, I was so excited about it doing the Dark Phoenix Saga, and then mm-hmm. I was like, what the hell is this? I was like, the hell is this? This ain't what, you know, I'm like all excited. Oh, there's going to be fire. She's going to be all I'm fired, a Phoenix Force, I can't wait to see it. And then she just walked around like a zombie. I was like, this shit sucks. Like, what the hell is this? Like, this isn't Dark Phoenix Saga? Come on, man. So, you know, I'm kind of excited, you know, for that movie, definitely. Deadpool, too. I've been reading a lot of Deadpool comics.
Okay.
Deadpool, you know, for this year, I was really never a big Thor fan, but I'm trying to, like, because that Thor Ragnarok is coming out, and I'm trying to understand and get in the Thor and the villains that are going to be in that movie, too. So I'm excited for Black Panther, though. I'm excited for that also. So especially after the trailer dropped, I'm pretty excited for that movie.
But, of course, you're also excited for your fight coming up here.
I'm excited for my fight.
No doubt
about that. But you got me. You can't give me on comic books and then, I can talk comics and video games all day.
I think it's one of those hobbies a lot of fighters have that I think people don't realize is reading comic books.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. I go to Comic-Con. I love going to Boston Comic-Con. That's probably one of my favorite things to do is go to Boston Comic-Con. I get like, so I'll buy the comics at the Hoyoke Mall, at the cards and collectibles, all that stuff for like $2. I'll go to Comic-Con, get them autographed and everything, you know, and then I'll get them vacuum sealed. So it's like, I like doing that a lot too, because it shows like, you know, it shows the artists that people actually read them and stuff. And, you know, I like the panels at Comic-Con, too. I'm a real fan.
So when you get them, you know, sealed up now, I mean, are you putting these up in the wall? They live in a bookcase? Where do they live once you do that?
So I put them in just like a little box.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just under my bed, honestly. And when I want to read them, I'll unseal them and read them, you know, carefully, because I don't want to ruin them. And just put them back nicely. So,
yeah, my buddies love Comic-Con. I live here in Florida. So they go. There's a big one in Orlando. They go all the years. And yeah, they show me all the pictures. They keep telling me, they're like, dude, you got to come. He goes, it's just a big party.
Oh, one of my goals for within the next 3 years is to go to San Diego Comic-Con, which is actually the weekend. And I want to go on and watch one of the panels, like maybe the Marvel or DC panel, or even the CW panel, you know, and just to watch, like, that would be just amazing. Even like, because I just hear that, like, San Diego Comic-Con is just a huge party. That's it. That's all. So, you know, I like actually going because of the, how people dress up. I don't dress up personally. But I love, like, I'll just start taking pictures with people that are dressed up and everything, because some people go all out.
I've seen these pictures. To me, like, it would be like an ideal people watching.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm just like you feel bad because you like start, you're like staring, and you're not trying to stare to be like, oh yeah, look at this weird guy. It's like, wow, they did a fucking awesome job on that cup. You really look like Captain America right now. Oh my Jesus. I saw it last year. I saw one guy that looked just like Hugh Jackman, Wolverine.
Oh really?
I was just staring at him. I was just like, dude, that costume's so cool. And I just stared at him. My buddy Will was just like, you're going to stop staring at him? You're kind of creeping me out.
See, now have you ever thought about coming out, like, your walkout song to be like a theme song of one of the comics?
I wanted to come out the Chain by Fleetwood Mac because of Guardians of the Galaxy, but they actually couldn't find the one that I wanted. I didn't want the whole song. I just wanted the part, the part that they played in the trailer, but we couldn't find, I was all depressed. I was like, oh man.
Do you got the walkout song picked out for this fight?
They only do generic. They don't have, they don't have walkout songs because the Access TV rights or whatever. So they only do the generic kind. But if I could come out to one song, it would be it would probably actually be the Wonder Woman theme song that, you know, like when, like in Batman vs. Superman, where she jumps down and like saves Batman from Doomsday, and then they start playing that song. That's a badass song to come out to. I don't know the name of it or anything, but that's a badass song. If anyone can find the name of it, you know, please shoot me a direct message or something. But that song is a badass song. That song pumped me up. Like, I was in the movie theater, and that came on, and me and my friends were like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, where can't you know, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
You can follow me on Instagram at Davis1504 or Facebook, Leon Davis. And it's actually the picture of the Green Ranger. So, who I just found out. Did you know that the Green Ranger fights MMA?
Yes.
I did not know that.
You have to be one of the few people that doesn't know.
I lost $20 because my buddy bet me $20 that he did. I was like, no, who, what? I was like, no. He's like 55 years old. No, he doesn't fight no MMA. And he's like, oh, yeah? And we looked him up, and I was like, oh, I was like, shit. And I ended up giving him $20. Up. Like,
damn. I'm surprised you didn't know that.
I didn't know that. No, I really didn't know that. That is so badass. That is badass. That is so cool. Wonder if he comes out to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the themes. That would.
He's got to. He has to.
Come out with like either the White Ranger uniform or the Green Ranger uniform.
He should. He should. That right. Embrace it. Just embrace it.
Exactly. Enjoy it. You know, you got to embrace it. I embrace being a comic book nerd. I embrace being a nerd. I don't care. You know what I mean? I love it. You know, I'd walk if I walk around with suspenders and everything on, you know, and after my fights dressed up in a suit. I don't care. You know, I got my glasses and everything. So I'm enjoying it.
And there you have my conversation with Leon Davis. I appreciate him coming on the podcast, talk about his fight coming up here at CES MMA 45 on August the 11th. A lot of great things there, talking about fighting on his sister's wedding day to his love of comic books. And I really do appreciate Leon coming on the podcast. Now, I want to wrap up this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast by talking about what's coming up on Saturday night, UFC 214. I cannot wait for this fight card. You know, there's only a couple times a year that personally for me, I just get truly excited to sit down and watch the fights, looking forward to hanging out with some buddies of mine on Saturday night and watching the fights. Just cannot wait for this fight card. You know, one of the things you always you see on MMA websites is X amount of reasons to watch a fight card. And you know what? And sometimes some of those pieces could be a little bit fluff pieces where, you know, they're just kind of coming up with reasons. But with this one, there's so many reasons to watch the main event, this fight card. Of course, it all starts off with the main event, you know, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia. Really interested to see, you know, how can Damian Maia perform against Tyron Woodley? I mean, Robbie Lawler, Donald Cerrone has got fight of the year written all over it, you know, and this is one of those fight cards that if you're going to invite, if you want to invite people over, friends of yours that are not MMA fans, because you just think the fight card is going to be great, this is one of those fight cards. You know, typically when me and my buddies go out and watch the fights, we typically meet at a restaurant or bar or one of our houses about an hour before the pay-per-view starts. But I mean, the prelims are just unbelievable. Andre Feely versus Calvin Kattar. Of course, you heard Calvin earlier on in the podcast. Really interested to see how he does in his UFC debut. One interesting note about that, they're both represented by the same management company. Then you got a featherweight matchup, a huge featherweight matchup. You know, it's, you talk about, there's going to be fights on this fight card that go under the radar just because of all the attention on the main event and the two other title fights on this card. But Naoto Moicano and Brian Ortega, that is a big matchup in the UFC 145-pound division. Look forward to seeing that one. Then you got the catchweight bout between Aljamain Sterling and Hendon Brown. This is a catchweight bout due to the state of California not licensing Kenan Burrell as a 135-pound fighter, so this will be a catch weight of 140 pounds. And, of course, the feature prelim will be the featherweight Ricardo Lamas versus Jason Knight. And we're going to see, can Jason Knight potentially come, a top five guy there at 145 pounds. And so I'm really looking forward to those TV prelims and the main card. I'm really excited for it. Manawa and Oldsmere obviously has a lot at stake there in the UFC light heavyweight division. I mean, depending on what happens in the main event, that could be a number one contender's fight. And, look, Robbie Lawler, I think one of the things that it'll be interesting to see if it comes out this week is if the issues of why Robbie Lawler left the American Top Team and other fighters that have left the American Top Team. It'll be interesting to start to see if some of those things come to light. I think that for the most part, fighters are not going to say anything, but it doesn't mean that people around those fighters don't start anything. I'll tell you, I've heard some rumors about some of the stuff that has gone down there, but you'd really like to hear a fighter go on the record with why a certain amount of fighters have decided to exit American Top Team. But look, what is drawing you to that main event is Daniel Cormier defending the UFC light heavyweight title against John Jones. I tweeted about this on Saturday, where, look, Daniel Cormier is the UFC champion. You cannot deny him that. But let's not kid ourselves. We all know John Jones is the greatest light heavyweight of all time. There is no doubt about that. I am picking John Jones to win this fight. I mean, typically on this podcast, I don't give my predictions. Do that on the preview podcast, which will come out on Friday. But I am picking John Jones. I think he's going to win by submission within the first 15 minutes of this fight. And during the conference call this week, John Jones said something that I absolutely love. And, well, he just took a little bit of a line from the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
In my mind, I look at it one way. It's like, in order to go to sleep considering yourself the baddest motherfucker that has lived throughout this era, you got to beat the baddest motherfucker. And I mean, he says, I didn't have to beat you. You beat yourself. And every time you say that, he validates what I'm saying. Yeah, you did. You just haven't beat me. You know what I mean? So, am I impressed? You can beat as many people as you want, but until you beat the guy, then you're not the guy.
I absolutely love that statement from John Jones. He has simply taken a line from the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and just simply saying, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And Daniel Cormier knows I am the man. I absolutely love that statement there from John Jones. Now, one of the other statements that I really liked and I thought brought some fascinating light to it was simply what both fighters said about their first matchup. Now, if you listen to the conference call on Monday, Daniel Cormier was fairly short for the most part, which from a media aspect, we want the guys that are going to give longer answers. And Daniel Cormier tried to, kind of kid around with John Jones about that. And John saying, hey, look, I'm excited. I'm going to answer these questions. I absolutely loved it. But they were both asked about the first fight. And you're going to hear Daniel Cormier's response first, and then you're going to hear John Jones. And John Jones brings a point up that I think a lot of people need to talk about when breaking down this fight and what Saturday night could look like.
I've watched the fight, but again, I feel like we're different fighters today than we were then. I'm not gonna gauge my performance this weekend on what happened in January of 2015. So I've watched the fight. Obviously, we've competed against each other before. But as the guy that lost the gauge what I'm going to do on Saturday night based on what happened 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
I watched the first fight a lot. I do, and my team here at Jackson's MMA, we are notorious for studying film, and so the beautiful thing about this rematch is, I've been able to somehow never lose because of what I find in footage. And now I have a blueprint of myself against someone that I've beat before. And this blueprint is gigantic because it's my first rematch. I'm super excited about my first rematch. I'm a huge fan of the sport. It's the reason why I didn't fight Chael Sonnen at UFC 151. I don't like fighting without studying first. And to have a blueprint of how to beat Daniel Cormier, of myself beating him, is gigantic. So we study that fight all the time. We know what he wants. We know, you know, we know a lot of things that he likes to do. And the thing that's most beautiful about being out of the equation for so long is that I've been able to watch him continue to fight over the last 2 years. And me and my team, we've seen very, very small changes. Very small changes. If I'm safe to say no changes. And in my situation against OSP, because I was a little gun-shy, I mean, I showed almost nothing. I literally did side kicks to the legs the whole time. I threw maybe three punches the whole fight, took him down against the cage. Yeah, I've been doing that my whole career, and that's something I'm really good at. But I've showed Daniel nothing. He has no clue of the progression. He has no clue what I've changed in my boxing. He doesn't know what I've changed in my clinching. He doesn't know what I've changed in my jiu-jitsu. He has nothing. I mean, I've watched him on the ground against Anderson Silva. We know what his top game looks like. I watched him take Anthony Johnson's back. We know what his back control looks like. We know what he's capable of. We have a huge blueprint on him where he really has no clue what I've done differently over the last 2 years.
And that was a great point made by John Jones, and where, you know, they're always talk about in rematches where one fighter has the advantage over the other. And, you know, most types in rematch will say the fighter that lost the first fight has the advantage going into the second fight. But John brought up a great point there, saying that, you know, he hasn't seen me since that OSP fight. He doesn't know what I've been working on. I know what he's been working on based on I can look at recent footage. So I thought that was very interesting. Also, in that conference call, it was very interesting to hear Daniel Cormier at one point said, well, John needs, you know, this fight. You know, he needs me. And I was like, no, you both need each other at the end of the day, because Daniel Cormier has not shown to be a pay-per-view draw without John Jones. So he needs John Jones in this matchup, just like John Jones needs Daniel Cormier. They both need each other. But I think if you had to say one fighter needs the other more than the other, I have to say Daniel Cormier needs John Jones, because Daniel Cormier is a competitor. You know, you damn well know that Daniel Cormier wants to be known as the greatest light heavyweight fighter of all time. He just doesn't want to be known as a guy that became the UFC champion due to John Jones being stripped of his title. You know, so to me, Cormier needs John Jones more than John Jones needs Daniel Cormier, but they both need each other. It's going to be a great fight on Saturday night. I'm interested to see, you know, what the changes that Daniel Cormier makes leading into this matchup. Of course, probably, you know, the first part of this fight is what happens on Friday morning in Anaheim. Do both fighters make weight? Of course, we all remember what happened with Daniel Cormier back there at UFC 210 and Talgate. Obviously, that's not going to happen here. You know, and Daniel Cormier mentioned just how bad of a weight cut that was. So I'm really looking for this fight card. I cannot wait for this fight card. Myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast, and as I said a little while ago, my pick is going to be John Jones. I think that he will walk away as the UFC light heavyweight champion. And I mean, look, I think that Jimmy Manawa will likely beat Volkan Oezdemir, but I think the UFC will try to book John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson. I think, and from a business aspect, that is probably the right decision for the UFC to make if John Jones does walk away as the UFC light heavyweight champion. But it should be a great matchup. But I said this before and I'll say it again. I think the jiu-jitsu of John Jones will be the difference in this fight. I mean, look, the first fight was a good fight, but it was a clear win by John Jones. No question about it. And I'm going to talk about this on the preview podcast later this week. My gut feeling says if Daniel Cormier does not win on Saturday night, that this will be the last time we see Daniel Cormier. This is a guy that has, you know, has himself set up for life after fighting with his broadcasting career. And, you know, if he loses and it's a dominating win by John Jones, I don't see the UFC, he might fall into kind of where Joseph Benavidez there is at 125 pounds. But I absolutely love this fight card coming up here on Saturday night, UFC 214. Of course, I do want to thank my guests that appeared here on this week's podcast, Calvin Cater, Kyler Phillips, John Castaneda, Giuliano Coutinho, and Leon Davis. All those interviews were done, with the exception of Calvin Kattar. The other ones were done via video form, so those will be posted up on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Coming up next week on the podcast, Ricky Simon is going to be on the podcast. We're going to talk about his upcoming fight on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, so look out for that. Also, towards the this weekend, look for an interview I'm going to have with Carlos Candelario. He was actually supposed to be on the podcast this week, but the timing just didn't work out, so I'll have a video interview later on this week with Carlos Candelario to talk about him being on the Tuesday Night Contender Series as well. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report podcast, which you always hear on Radio Influence, also available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary Taskmaster Booker Man, Devil himself, Kevin Sullivan, welcome to Sitting Ringside. I believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that there would not have been an NWO without you gaining Hogan's trust by feeding him what he was used to for a period of time of the Dungeon of Doom. Is that correct?
David, he stayed at my house that night before with Peter Young, his agent. Peter cried to me that I couldn't turn him heel till 2:30 in the morning. We went to bed. I didn't come to the building, if you remember, till the match before. I didn't want him backing out. I had to get Jimmy. Everybody was telling him, don't turn. You know what I mean? Everybody didn't think it was going to work. It worked great because it also, people had said, well, I know he had Stinger's backup. Bullshit. There was no backup. It was either that or the two of them were going to get killed. But the thing, that reason why it worked, think who was in the ring. Diesel, Razor, and Hulk Hogan. New York against NWA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's not a doubt in my mind, by the way, that if you would have left the without Hulk, he would have driven back to Tampa and blown it off. Because
I think so too.
But the bigger point, there had to be a Dungeon of Doom to gain the trust to get to the NWO, correct?
And that was it too, David. Up until that time, you know, when I used to wrestle, I would hit the ring full bore, you know, going full bore. And, you know, we were wrestling. We didn't become characters until he got there. It was me. It was Hugh Morris, which could be, he was a great performer at the time. Right. And I had Conan, I forget. Ming.
Man.
And we were wrestling the Horsemen, and we were doing fours on a Friday, on a Monday night. So it did work in his numbers because he was Hogan and because he was getting a lot of, you know, how much money he got on the pay-per-views.
Right.
But then when he saw, this new thing is going to go by me and I'm going to become passe. You know, like people always roll their eyes and say, well, why didn't they do this? David, you know this story. I walked into a room with Sid Vicious, 6'9", with the baby face who was 5'8" at best, meaning Benoit, and asked them to put Benoit over clean. Sometimes it's a lot, and he bitched and moaned and fought. Why am I putting a midget over? What is wrong with you? Sometimes, you know, it isn't as easy as it sounds. Plus, Hulk had that creative control, so I had to get really close to him where he trusted me.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.